This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast. Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm your host, Dave Williams. It's great to have your company once again. Tech Talk, our opportunity as blind and partially sighted people to get together each week and explore the world of technology. If you'd like to get involved, we'd love to hear from you. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the wearable visual aid MyEye 3 from Orcam. Plus, we'll have an update from Dolphin about their popular accessible reading app, Easy Reader. That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman and Jackie Brown. Fantastic to have you all together once again. Let's check in and find out what's going on in your world of technology. Hubert?
If you are looking to update to iOS 18.1, recently released, and looking forward to taking advantage of some of the Apple Intelligence features, you might want to be careful from what I've seen. Apparently, some of the Apple Intelligence features are not working as expected with VoiceOver. So if you want to, for example, summarize an email, which is one of the examples mentioned, apparently that's not actually accessible once you click the summary button. It will actually say loading, but VoiceOver will not actually find the summary elements on the screen. Some of the summary features do work, so if you want to summarize your notifications, apparently that does work, but there are a few bugs to be aware of. One of them including the VoiceOver with summaries, but also another one, there are issues with putting apps into folders using the rota method, this being where if you find an app, you can swipe down in the editing mode and select to drag it, and then finding the folder you want to put it in, and then using the swipe up or down gesture to put it into the folder. That is a bit hit and miss at the moment too. So few disappointing bugs, shall I say, to maybe make you want to think twice about, for now, upgrading to iOS 18.1. So a bit of a warning to the users.
Has this been your experience, Hubert, or this is reports that you've found online?
It's reports that I have seen on AppleVis, so every time there's an update, AppleVis posts a bit of a kind of post summarizing some of the bugs their testing at least has carried out and found out. I've not updated yet because of what I've seen. I'm holding off a bit because, one, I'd like to take advantage of the Apple Intelligence features. Two, I love my folders. Everything has a folder. Every app is in a folder. And I want to be able to use that feature. So for now, I'm holding off.
Yeah, you sound like me. I've got my home screen. It's kind of really well organized, really nicely organized into folders. And then there's the odd couple of apps that don't really fit in a folder and they're just scattered around. But it's somewhat organized.
Yeah, mine's the same. I have folders as well. But I have noticed even before this update that when you edit, you put it your screen into edit mode, and then you try to drag an app that you might have downloaded into a specific folder. It is hit and miss, but I've known this for a little while anyway. Can be a bit annoying, and it does take a bit longer to do. But even within folders, I like them to be in alphabetical order within a folder. So when I'm trying to move apps around inside a folder, when you want to drop, then that can be very hit or miss. But it has been for a while, so it's not, I don't think that's a new thing.
I gave up on folders when when Braille screen input came along and you could search for the app that you wanted just by typing it or ask Siri. So I just kind of felt like, well, what's the point in having a folder, really, if you can just call up the app that you want instantly? I don't want to go trolling through a bunch of folders. All right, so just word to the wise then, hold back and turn off those automatic updates if you're concerned about falling foul of some of those issues. Callum, what's new with you?
Well, I was going to mention this as well, actually. I just find this mad. Like, going back to the Apple Intelligence thing, this has been, like, the summarization of notes and emails and documents has been one of the headline features for months, and I'm really surprised that this has come out with so many accessibility issues. I guess we're becoming a little bit, this is a little bit like the Sonos situation, isn't it, where there's almost a, I always feel there's a guarantee of accessibility from Apple. I'm never normally concerned, all software has bugs, but I'm never normally concerned about, you know, something that's native to the operating system like this coming out that's not accessible like this. I don't think we've seen this for a while, but even on even from a mainstream point of view, I think the rollout of Apple Intelligence isn't actually going as well as they maybe hoped it would. I think we're all just a bit underwhelmed by Apple Intelligence, if I'm honest, at this stage.
Is this one of the risks, Callum, do you think, of accessibility in mainstream devices, that potentially, you know, and I say potentially, that accessibility is not the number one priority?
It's not their main focus, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it is. And that's where, I mean, we always have the debate about specialist technology versus mainstream, and that's, I suppose, where the specialist technology is always going to have its place, isn't it? Because their number one focus is us, and it is going to be accessibility. Whereas with Apple, they can kind of drop the ball like this, and we can blame them and we should blame them, but we also have to respect, like you said, yeah, that they're a mainstream company. Accessibility is just a tiny part of what they do, sadly.
I know there's a move to try and get accessibility up the priority list. You know, it's there with security and other things as part of that, you know, that release process and the schedule of things that you have to, you know, the quality gates that you have to kind of pass through before you're allowed to release software. That's something that I think NFB in the US would advocate for. Any thoughts around that? Do you think, you know, the whole release should be held up? They should delay it until they get the accessibility stuff sorted.
But when you think about specialist products, you know, there are examples I could give where bespoke or, you know, specialist in quotes equipment has been released, and they are, the company concerned is so concerned with getting it out there to compete with their rivals that, you know, their software or their hardware isn't all it's cracked up to be either. So it isn't, I don't think it is just a mainstream accessibility issue. I think there's a lot goes on in the specialist market as well that has been released that nowhere near should have been.
Mm. It's maybe it's a function of commercial priorities rather than specialist versus mainstream, right? Because at the end of the day, those developers have got to be paid and you've got to sell some stuff to...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Be interested to hear what you think about this. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie, you've been thinking about passwords.
Yes, this is the time of year when people are going to be doing more online shopping in all likelihood, because you're coming up to Black Friday, you're coming up to Christmas, and, you know, people are going to be ultra... you know, keen to jump online and do stuff. And you've also going to bear in mind that scammers are on high alert as well. They'll be looking for any opportunity they can to take your money, empty your bank account, do whatever they can to con you into doing something nasty. So, you know, it brings me to password managers. And I think that is a really important thing to have in your toolbox, is some kind of password manager. We've been using 1Password, that's the digit 1 followed by password, all one word. It's a really good password manager. It's very accessible. You can use it on all your devices. So you can use it on Windows, on your iPhones, iPads, Android devices, anything really that needs a password manager, you can use 1Password on it. You do have to pay. You can pay for a family subscription, which is what we've got. So Martin and I share ours, but we each have our own account. We each have our own vault, because they call them vaults. You can put not just passwords in there, but you can put your credit card details, different websites. There are different fields where you can complete information in them that you want. And it is a really it's really secure as well, because you've got a kind of a two-factor authentication thing going on. When you sign up for 1Password, they give you a secret, what they call a secret key, which is a load of digits and letters. You must not lose that. And then you also have to create a master password. So you have two ways of securing your data and your credentials. I urge people to use it, even if it's not 1Password. There are free ones out there like KeePass, Bitwarden. You don't have to pay for them, but I do think 1Password are the ones that we've looked at. We've been using it for quite a long time now. Use a different password for every website that you visit, and that's why 1Password or a password manager is really important to have. Because if you keep the same password and you're scammed, they're going to be able to access everything. So a 1Password or similar manager is much better to have loads of different passwords for different websites. And that's why it's useful, because you can store all those in 1Password without having to remember what they are. So please, I urge people to be very careful, especially at this time of year, but all year round, scammers are just out to get money off you. Never, ever give anyone your password over the phone. If they're asking for it, just put the phone down. Never, ever give anyone your password, and invest, because it is an investment in a password manager.
Absolutely, and I think what you've just said as well, where you have to have so many different passwords these days. Without a password manager, it would be really tricky to remember them all, because that's the problem I'm having, where I have loads of passwords and I can never remember them. So the amount of times I reset passwords for various websites just because I forget. So I think highlighting these sorts of services is really important, because there are ways for you to remember your passwords without having to write them down in notes or in a book. So I think that is a really important. I haven't tried part 1Password myself. I use iCloud Keychain, which is based on Apple devices, and that's a godsend because I don't have to worry about my passwords. I've got an awful memory when it comes to passwords these days, and it is really, really beneficial, and they're all very much secure.
Right, that's the question, Jackie. So the reason you're recommending 1Password then presumably is because it's cross-platform,
It
because a lot of
is. Oh, yeah.
platforms now have
Their
password
own.
managers
Yeah.
built in, don't they?
Yeah,
You
they
know,
do.
Hubert alluded to the Apple one there, and of course on Google, if you've got a Google account, that can remember passwords for websites as well. So this is going to work across platforms, that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Basically, you can go to 1Password.com. You can sign up. As I say, you can have an individual or you can have a family. And within that family, you each have a vault of your own, but also you can have a family shared vault on it as well, where mainstream things for family finances and websites like your energy maybe or your phone. You can put those into a shared vault as well. So you do have a lot of options. And I can tell you that Martin uses Android and it's very accessible with that. I use an iPhone, it's accessible with that. And it's accessible on Windows as well. So if you want something that goes right across devices, there are a lot of different ones out there. KeePass is another one that you can either have free or you can pay for. And it does work across devices. But I must say I've been using 1Password and I don't have any reason not to.
Like you, but I use the iCloud Keychain one as well because I'm mainly on my Apple devices. It does work across Windows as well as iCloud Keychain to some extent. It's not the best integration, but it does work. Not Android though. So if you're with someone who uses Android, or if you're, if you go between Apple and Android, then it's not. Yeah, you're definitely better off with something like 1Password. But I don't actually know what any of my passwords are, pretty much, because I just let the Keychain just automatically generate them. And then just fill them in. It just picks up on the website that I'm on and or the app that I'm in and uses autofill. But the interesting thing with that is that because it's tied to the domain of the website, I'm trying not to get too technical here, but if you've fallen for a phishing email, for example, that's telling you to log into Amazon, and let's say it's taken you to Amazon instead of Amazon, In the case of iCloud Keychain, and I think 1Password is similar, it won't give you the option to autofill that password because it knows that it's not the real Amazon site. So it can protect you in that way as well.
Okay. And of course, your password is only just one part of staying safe online. You mentioned phishing scams as well. And lately, I've seen a few of those text messages that say, oh, we tried to deliver you today. Click here to confirm your address. And I'm thinking, I haven't ordered anything. I'm not sure why you need my address. So yeah, just staying vigilant, of course, very important. Let us know if you've got any tips about staying vigilant or you have thoughts about upgrading the software of your device. If you've fallen foul of any accessibility issues, we'd love to hear from you. Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, Jackie, thank you very much.
Just what kind of difference can a new piece of technology make to your work or home life? Kieran Crosby, a rehabilitation and mobility officer at Psych Scotland, has found a new piece of technology that is helping in a number of ways. Kieran, welcome into RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi.
And your work with Psych Scotland, Kieran, you help people with sight loss in many aspects of their daily lives. Talk us through a bit of that work.
So, yeah, lots of things. Work closely with people who with vision loss to do basic kitchen skills, to use long canes, and to sort of get used to using new bits of technology that are coming out. A bit like the MyEye Pro 3, as well as using some older technologies like large CCTVs or electronic magnifiers. So it's very varied.
And you mentioned the Orcam MyEye Pro 3. You've just started using the piece this year. Talk us through it. What does it do?
It's basically a little device that clips onto a pair of glasses or into a mount, and it reads a document to you. It's got other features on it other than that. Some features such as an AI system on it, so it can learn people's faces and tell you who people are, or you can look down a corridor. I've had a lot of practice around the corridors in the Site Scotland offices, and it'll tell you what it sees and tell you where exits are and things. So it's a good little bit of kit for general day-to-day stuff. So if you're going out to a restaurant, say, and you want to know what's in a menu, it can read to you what's in the dish, or it can even tell you what's in a picture. And it's really quite good for that.
So once that information comes through, you're able to sort of interrogate it and ask it more information and sort of drill down into some information you may be looking for?
Not so much with the AI side of it. It's more just pointed, it tells you what's there, and you can move your head to get the next bit of information, a bit like a static picture of what's in front of you.
And is it easy to control?
I found it very useful. There's small aspects of it which maybe could be improved. For example, it's not like an Alexa system where you can use an app to do all the settings. You've kind of got to wait for a menu to reach their menu and press for the next menu and press for the next menu, and then you get the menu you want. But once you kind of get used to it, it's actually fairly straightforward to use.
And did it take you a long time to get used to wearing it?
Yeah, it took me a little bit of time to get used to sort of the practicalities of it more than the actual using it. So like reading a book, instead of holding a book normally, I had to fold the pages over or cover one page up because it would try and read both pages at once. So it would read the top line on one side of the page and then it would read the top line on the other, which really confused me in the beginning. But once I sort of got through those wee teething problems, yeah, it's really quite good. I've managed to read Beano, which is a comic my son likes, using it, and it describes the picture and the words, so it's really good.
And how has the device changed your working life?
Oh, my working life's completely different now. So before, I used to use a lot of readback technology, but you'd have to copy what you're reading, put it into this into a file, and then give a second to read it, and then, you know, you could be sitting there for about 20 minutes with a screen reader just trying to get to the one bit in a document you wanted to look at. Now with this thing, it's just on my glasses, point to what I want it to read, it'll read me it. An email pops up. Like, for example, at the minute, I've got two screens in front of me. One of them's got an email on of it. One of them has just normal text on it. And I can jump between the two with my Orcam and work out what I want to read. In addition to that, if I get a letter, which I frequently do get sent letters by service users, I can put it in its mount and it will read it from the mount. It takes a lot of time to do all that stuff, and just having it to be able to do that is just half the amount of time I need to spend doing bits and pieces.
And what do your colleagues think of it? What do they make of it when you're using the piece?
In the beginning, they all thought it was really good. I think they all got a bit irritated by it constantly reading everything. So I invested in a set of headphones. And now I think they just find it really interesting. And a lot of them are really pleased for me that I'm not constantly asking them to read something to me, or they're more than, you know, they're not being disturbed by the sound. But a couple of people have asked me about it to go and demo it with our client group and things, which has been really quite an interesting one from my perspective, getting to go out and show you a bit of kit that's really revolutionized my life. Getting to show it to clients is really good.
And what kind of support was available when you were sort of first learning to use the MyEye Pro 3? Was there support available from the developers of the actual bit of kit, or did you look elsewhere to find out sort of the best ways of using it?
So I was quite lucky. My manager had a contact with a group called Optilec, who are the UK suppliers, and a gentleman called Paul. Him and I had a couple of email exchanges about it, and then he came out and visited me. And he sat down and he showed me a lot of the features, because it was brand new. There was no one else in the UK was using one. There were a few features that he didn't understand and I knew more about. So it was quite cool to be able to teach him them. But yeah, someone from Optilec, I've always been there on the end of an email if I needed to ask a question about something, or if there was a function I wasn't sure I was using properly, a quick email, couple of email exchanges, and they've been really helpful in advising me on different techniques and different ways. And it's been great to have that level of support from the suppliers to do these things.
You mentioned it's a new piece of technology. How did you get the Orcam MyEye Pro 3? What was your experience like with Access to Work, and how do you think listeners might be able to do the same sort of thing?
So Access to Work was I found a bit tricky. Because of the amount of words, I often talk about there's too many words in it for me. Access to Work, I felt, had a lot of words, and it took me about 2-3 months to sort of work my way through it using screen readers and my family. Once the sort of it got going and I got all the forms filled in, I'd already identified I wanted an Orcam, and I started to look at sort of the models, and I noticed they had the MyEye Pro 3, and I thought, oh, that's the one I might go for, because it was the most up to date. And submitted the claim form to Access to Work. I had a couple of conversations with people from Access to Work. My boss got sent some paperwork he had to fill in, and then from there the device just got okayed. They approved the money. I know Sight Scotland had to pay some money towards it, and then it was posted out to me. It all happened really, really quickly.
And do you know what the cost of the unit is itself?
At the minute, it's retailing about £4,250.
And if you could improve the device, what would you do?
Well, if I was going to improve it from a VI perspective, probably do a bit more distinguishing on the sort of buttons, a bit more colour contrast on the actual device, because it's a nice black, you know, the whole thing's black. It's got MyEye Pro written on it. A lens at one end and a blue light at the other. And in between there's like a taskbar you can move your finger on, but it's not easily visible. Like if you look at the pictures online, you can't really tell it's there. So that I would put some sort of marketing on that, sort of make it a yellow or an orange color, because that's also where the volume is. So to be able to see that a bit better would be good. Also probably raise them a little bit so it's a bit more, you can find them with your fingers. From a dyslexia point of view, only really thing I would improve with it would be some sort of laser. So you could just point it at the word, press something on the side of the device, point it at the first sentence in your book or laptop and let it read from there. Because sometimes when you're constantly putting your finger out to read, it can be a bit difficult. From a general setup point of view, I think having some sort of app that you can access, just like you do with an Alexa, where you can access all the information about what you want to put onto it, what information you need to have stored on it, what devices you want to link it to, some of the basic settings as well. So I changed the voice from the male voice to the a female Irish voice because I just found it easier to cope with, because some of the computer-generated voices are really irritating. So that took quite a while to sort of get into all the nuts and bolts of it. So Yeah, I'd probably would do an app and some sort of laser pointer and some general colour contrast for the buttons.
Well, if people would like to find out more about the work of Site Scotland, where's the best place to do that?
So there's multiple places. So if you live in Scotland, that's the main thing. If you head onto our website, so it's www.sitescotland.org.uk. And from there, there's lots of information about how you can support us and what support we can give to you, from our contact support line to our rehabilitation services within Edinburgh and the Lothians, and how to make a referral to us. We've also got all sorts of information about from people's own personal stories about their sight loss journeys and about how they got assistance for that.
And you're using the MyEye Pro 3 in your work now on a day-to-day basis. Do you get asked about it a lot? Are there lots of service users for Sight Scotland who ask you and sort of have heard it all about it and would like to try it for themselves?
So yeah, a couple of service users have seen me use it and they've been really interested in it and are currently working on grants for them so they can get one themselves. It sort of varies the sort of people that are wanting to use it. People that are really like reading books, like physically holding a book and reading it, really, really like it, really interested in having it. Others who are more quite happy to listen to a book, they tend to move towards the sort of library-based apps or the sort of other paid apps you can get for their audiobooks.
Kieran Crosby, Rehabilitation and Mobility Officer at Sight Scotland. Thanks for sharing your experiences here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Let's talk EGX now. So if you've never heard of EGX, it is a huge gaming conference where all sorts of game developers, gamers and gaming industry professionals turn out to find out the latest news in gaming and look at various projects that go on in the gaming industry. It takes place in London every year and RNIB was at EGX this year. And, well, I wanted to find out exactly what work RNIB was doing towards accessible gaming. And therefore, I spoke to RNIB's research officer, Johnny Marshall, to find out exactly what has been going on. Now, we have had EGX on the 26th of October. It's now time to find out exactly what happened. So joining me once again is RNIB's research officer, Johnny Marshall. Johnny, thank you for joining us again.
It's a pleasure to be back.
How did the work that RNIB had planned go at EGX? This includes, you know, what happened and what was the reception to the various announcements that RNIB have made at EGX?
Yeah, so the main part of RNIB being at EGX was to launch the dev kit, which highlighted ways in which games can be made accessible. And the dev kit is available on the RNIB website. We also launched the RNIB player tester panel. So this is a resource that developers can tap into and they can have expert testers look at their games and provide feedback. So it's feedback from end users, so people who will actually be playing the games, which is very important as that's one of the crucial things. This kind of took the format of a panel discussion. So we had various people who had been involved in different aspects. As part of the panel, we had Professor Robin Sloan from Abertay University. He was talking about how accessibility can be integrated more into higher education, so how it could be integrated into sort of game design courses. We had somebody from Hex, who's a developer, talking about how development and accessibility can kind of integrate and how they've found the process of trying to develop an accessible game and how they used AI to do that. And we kind of had discussions about how creativity and accessibility can integrate together and how accessibility can be part of the creative process when you think about it from the start, which I think is one of the crucial things. And we had some sort of perspectives on lived experience of playing games with sight loss as well.
What were the opinions of game professionals who got to, you know, find out about the dev kit and what it can be useful for?
I would say the reception's been quite positive from people at the event, as well as following on from that, we sent out an email to our contacts, and we've had some positive responses from that already, where people are interested in having a presentation about these accessibility services RNIB can offer to their studios. So that would be the dev kit and the player panel. So we've already had inquiries about presenting those to studios to aid in their accessibility efforts. So I think it's very positive.
And based on all the work that has been done so far and all the positive feedback following EGX, what are the next steps in this particular line of work of encouraging gaming accessibility and, you know, making games accessible? What next steps is RNIB taking following the success of EGX?
I'd say one of the main things is continuing to promote the dev kit because it is a living document. So with technological advances and industry feedback, that document will be updated to reflect up-to-date practices. So that's one of the key things. And then I'd say promoting the player panel, because end-user feedback is crucial, and that's one of the things that came out of RNIB's research. So I think really promoting those things and then continuing to look forward is the launch of the game, which there's a trailer for, and that will demonstrate various aspects from the dev kit, and that's kind of going to reinforce some of it.
How do you play games if the world of gaming isn't accessible to you? The RNIB dev kit has the answer. Introducing Spectrum Shift. Somewhere in the 21st century, people stopped caring about the world. The surface was deserted and destroyed. Everything fell into ruin. The survivors were forced underground. In the depths, one inventor is working hard to build a better world, accessible for everyone. Take on their mission and master accessible game development. Roam through the ruins of the old world and explore visual, audio, and physical game adjustments. Battle through levels and eradicate the waves that destroyed the world. Every problem you solve is crafted to unlock new worlds for players with sight loss. Navigate diverse environments, each representing a real sight loss condition. Are you ready to take on the challenge and build a world where gaming is accessible to everyone? Coming soon. Brought to you by TNP, Hex and Bark Soho. Search RNIB, designed for every gamer.
Now, with the game still being in development, but the trailer being shown at EGX, what were some of the opinions that you were given about the trailer from gaming, gamers and gaming professionals?
The feedback we've had so far is that it looks like it would be a useful resource for people to have in addition to the dev kit, as it brings alive some of the accessibility features and it allows you to have a more of a hands-on experience of using and looking at the features demonstrated in the dev kit.
Talking about the player panel, how can people sign up to the player panel? Who can sign up and when can this be done? Can it be done now?
Yeah, so the player panel currently already has over 200 blind and partially sighted gamers in the pool. But if you would like to sign up, you can head over to the Design for Every Gamer web pages. So if you search Design for Every Gamer and RNIB, the web page will be there, and one of the sections on that is the player panel, and there is a link to sign up on there. And also for developers, there is a form that can be filled in if you would like to access the player panel.
Have you already had some developers sign up to access the player panel?
Yes, there have been a few requests come in looking into it, so we'll have to see how that goes, and hopefully with more exposure to it, we'll have more and more developers interested in it, as that is one of the key things they said they were interested in from our research, which we did in 2022.
What's the next sort of big gaming event where more developments from RNIB's work on accessible gaming could be announced?
I think the next big one will probably be Develop Brighton, which is in July next year, because that gives us time to work on and expand on projects that we've got going in the background. And I think it's one of the biggest developer conferences in the UK. I think it's actually the biggest one. It has about 5,000 game developers attend it every year, so it would be an excellent platform to launch and update everyone on the work we're doing.
Fantastic. Well, Johnny Marshall, RNIB's research officer, thank you very much for joining us and telling us about RNIB at EGX here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, if you use RNIB reading services, the chances are you download those books using EasyReader from Dolphin Computer Access. EasyReader is not a new app, and I've come to Dolphin today to find out a little bit about where EasyReader came from and some of the most recent developments. And I'm joined by Noel Duffy. Noel, you're the managing director at
Dolphin. We call it CEO nowadays.
CEO, yeah, okay. Right, okay. Simon Kitchen, tell me your
Hi, Dave. So I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Dolphin.
You're the Chief Marketing Officer. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. So EasyReader came from an understanding that individual reading needs vary considerably, and there isn't always that understanding, that deep understanding of what each person's individual reading needs are, but also that there was a huge amount of duplication of effort in terms of making accessible content, and then it was those quite deep understandings that led to EasyReader. Now I remember EasyReader in the early days when it used to come on a CD, you know, and you'd pop it onto your computer and the software would load and you might be able to read, I don't know, the Dolphin User Guide, and we didn't have all these libraries. So how did we get from there to here? How did we get to a point of, I mean, I think before we started recording, Simon, you said you're coming up to about 50 libraries now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So working with lots of libraries around the world to make a direct connection, a direct simple connection as well. So every library kind of has the same, you know, simple menu-based structure for being able to find and download and read accessible titles. So we're now in the fortunate position that in the UK we're working with a variety of different library services. So we're working with RNIB reading services to provide a direct connection to audiobooks from RNIB reading services. Calibre Audio as well is directly available in EasyReader app. We have the RNIB Bookshare Education Collection, which, as Noel says, is just fantastic. I mean, over 1.1 million education titles in accessible formats for students to read is such a long way forward on where we were previously. But also newspaper services as well. So RNIB News Agent is available in EasyReader app as well. So that you can subscribe to different newspapers and magazines and have the daily content delivered directly to you in an accessible format in EasyReader app as well. And that's not just in the UK. We work with libraries in America, in Australia, throughout Europe. So yeah, as you say, Dave, we're close to 50 libraries now around the world with EasyReader. So it's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
So that's a tremendous amount of work, a tremendous amount of content, and a tremendous amount of versatility in terms of how that content plays. You know, you can adjust the reading speed for audio, and obviously for written content, you're able to change all the background and the colours, which obviously massively important for readers with dyslexia. So, at point of use, there's no charge for that for most users right now.
Absolutely, EasyReader app, and it's you can get started. You no longer need a Dolphin account. You can get started straight away and sign into your accessible library services. And in terms of connections to accessible libraries, EasyReader, you know, we've made it clear EasyReader app is free, and it will be free as well. You know, for access to accessible library services, we are also. We're looking in terms of EasyReader Premium as well, and the ways that we can really take inclusion and accessible reading to a next level. So building on that great foundation that EasyReader app provides by making it, you know, students able in particular to sort of read and learn, just like other classmates can pick up a book and start reading on any device, and make that as, you know, as normalised and as possible.
Right. So let's come on to that then, because that was my next question about how is that sustainable? Obviously, content from other, you know, commercial sources, you pay for that, whether you buy a title or a subscription or something like that. You mentioned Easy Reader Premium there. Just outline for us what that is and who it's for.
Our Easy Reader Premium is, as I said previously, it's about taking inclusion and accessible reading kind of to a new level. So, with, you know, if you think about in fundamental principles, really we're talking about any student who's vision impaired or dyslexic or has other accessibility needs to be able to read in line with their peers and do exactly the same thing of just find a book, open it and start reading. And that hasn't been the reality in the past, but this is what Easy Reader Premium is all about. It's all about making curriculum resources accessible. And that's what inclusion means. It's about being able to pick up that same book and read it in a way that's accessible to you, you know, on any device, whether you're at school, whether you're on the bus, whether you're at home, and read it in a way that's accessible to you. That's what inclusion is all about, and that's what Easy Reader Premium is aiming to deliver.
Excellent. So just to summarize then, so Easy Reader Premium subscribers are able to have their content from wherever that came, whichever library, it might be RNIB, Bookshare, it might be another provider, to have that content synchronized across multiple devices. So that's all your titles, all your history, as you said, notes, bookmarks, that kind of thing. But in addition to that, you're also able to synchronize your colors and your font preferences and your background and all of that. Have I understood?
Absolutely.
That?
That's one of the key benefits, is bridging that gap between school and home. But there's much more to an education plan for Easy Reader Premium than you know, bridging the gap between school and home is absolutely critical. But with Easy Reader Premium, we know that there's so many students that can benefit from accessible reading. I mean, recent reports from the UK government was that 17% of students have a special educational need. And as you said before, Dave, accessibility is different for different people. You know, whereas one student may be blind and needs to interact with a screen reader or braille to read content, another student may be dyslexic, need accessible colours, you know, a natural sounding voice to read content back. Others may struggle with attention, and where I mentioned around, you know, restricting the view to three lines at a time can really help to focus on attention. So accessibility means different things for different people. And that's why with Easy Reader Premium, it's a flexible reading accommodation so that schools can normalise accessible reading as part of their everyday practices. And if students are vision impaired or dyslexic or have other special education needs, they can use this as a way of reading in a way that's accessible for them. And there are lots of other benefits as well. For example, with Easy Reader Premium, you get a direct connection to RNIB Bookshare, as we mentioned before, and that's available in the free app. But it goes beyond the connections to RNIB Bookshare as well by making classroom resources accessible. So we're talking about a wider set of curriculum resources. So with Easy Reader Premium, you get a direct connection to Google Classroom and to Microsoft Education, and it's available in exactly the same way as the RNIB Bookshare library is through straightforward menus. It makes it easy for teachers to share curriculum resources with students, whether that is through, you know, the Google Classroom, Microsoft Education, or some of the more old school sort of methods of emailing or USB transfer. So we're talking about a wider set of curriculum resources as well.
And in terms of the tech, is that going to work cross-platform? So if I use a Windows laptop at school, for example, maybe an iPad at home, all those elements are going to be synchronized across platforms.
Exactly. It's critical because people do have different devices available in different locations. So you may prefer to have a smartphone on the move or a laptop at home or a tablet in school. And yeah, absolutely, it works across all of the different devices that Easy Reader's on. Noel mentioned the Mac also, and you know, you can with Premium, you can log into a Mac as well. So if schools are using Macs, then that's an additional benefit. But I did want to just briefly touch on some of the important aspects for teachers as well, because as we said before, it's around, you know, saving time for teachers. But also with Easy Reader Premium, the teachers will be able to use a dashboard. So this first of all makes it really easy to kind of create accounts and create logins for students so that they can embed accessibility and accessible reading throughout their setting. But it also provides some insights into student reading activity. And this is really important because we need to make sure that the accommodations that we're providing are actually having the intended benefit for students. So, you know, we can see the, you know, this isn't about being Big Brother with data. You know, we can see the titles that students are reading, but also how far through each title are they and how much time have they been spending reading. It's not about being sort of, you know, Big Brother with data. It's about identifying whether this accommodation is enabling students to enjoy reading, to read more content, to, you know, do all the things that we kind of set out to do with accessible reading in general. And we also have CPD accredited training as well. So Noel mentioned those recommendations for, you know, that were provided a long time ago, and we have the Dolphin Learning Zone and a course which is dedicated to accessible reading with Easy Reader Premium. It goes through all the different elements that we've sort of spoken about today, Dave.
Okay, and we know that often when it comes to accessible technology, the user and the customer are not always the same person. So who's the subscriber here? Is it the family or the school, or who subscribes to Easy Reader Premium to make all this available for those students?
So Easy Reader Premium is available either as a personal plan, which you can purchase in-app, and that's £50 a year, or you can break it down as a monthly. So it's available for personal use. Within an education context, we always recommend an education plan, and this is where the school subscribes for an education plan, and they can create as many logins as they like. It's a fixed sort of annual cost, and they can create as many logins as they like. And this is all about embedding accessible reading throughout a setting, because as we said before, so many students can benefit. And I know there's great awareness within the vision impairment community when we talk about RNIB Bookshare. You know, we're really keen to kind of spread this word about accessible reading, particularly to groups that are supporting people with dyslexia and other accessibility requirements who are absolutely eligible for RNIB Bookshare, but perhaps didn't know that this service was available and how their students can benefit.
So for an individual who wants to subscribe, it's £50 a year, so £1 a week, less than the lottery.
It's extremely affordable, and then with our education plan, the cost per student, once you break it down, I mean, it's better value the more students you add. So yeah, the more students that you add, the lower the cost per
yeah.
student.
Right, so organisations obviously need to contact you for a quote on that. Yeah, okay, all right.
17% of students have a recognisable disability in the UK, which is... it's about 1.7 million students in total. I mean, there's a nice number symmetry there. But, you know, there's perhaps 1% are visually impaired, and the rest have other conditions like dyslexia, ADHD, ADD, autism, all who have struggles reading. And Easy Reader can be set up to work for each of those student cohorts and give them an experience. So, you know, in addition to some of the features, you know, like being able to change the color settings, make the text a bit bigger or spread out the lettering, you know, there is the added advantage of having speech in there as well if kids are struggling. And there's an issue that has been the bane of my life for years and years and years, is that, you know, children are taught to read until they're about 7, and after 7 they're really beginning to read to learn. And if they're blocked from reading for whatever reason, they're not learning, and by the time they get to secondary school, they're already lost. So this is an opportunity to set this right, to allow children, regardless of their progress on reading, to be able to continue to learn. So I just wanted to make
absolutely.
That point.
Well, look, chaps, I think we've got the gist, and I'm really excited about the work that you're doing, and thank you, and I'm sure it's making a massive difference in the lives of a lot of students. If anybody wants to explore EasyReader Premium or even EasyReader generally, what's the best way to do that?
Well, we've got the Dolphin website, yourdolphin.com, and we have the EasyReader pages there. You can, as we mentioned before, for a personal plan, there's information within the app. So if you try and use a premium feature, you'll get a message, and that'll kind of outline some of the advantages and give you an option if you would like to subscribe. For an education plan, we're offering 60-day trials for schools, so that you can try it for free for a 60-day period with a subset of students, and we can make sure that this is working for you, but it's removing the barriers to reading and learning, and then, you know, before we start rolling out to a wider group of students within the facility as well.
Great stuff. Well, Simon Kitchen, Marketing Manager at Dolphin, and Noel Duffy, CEO. Appreciate you joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. We're heading back to Scotland now, and Amelia Hilton at the Game On exhibition, where Amelia's finding out about some new technology.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I'm here at the National Museum of Edinburgh for the Game On Accessible Gaming Night, and I'm joined by Carrie Waterton from Rebellion, who is part of the panel, and we were just talking about the history of gaming, as the Game On exhibition has some of the oldest video games in existence. So can you share again what you were sharing with me about kind of the origins, or about how earlier games were a bit more accessible than present ones?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I was talking about how when gaming was first came about, it was in terms of limited controls, controllers were a lot simpler, there wasn't as much security in terms of using custom controllers as well, so there was a lot of flexibility in what people could use. And also talking about the graphic side of things, so particularly from a visual impairment perspective, having visuals that were pixel art or that were high contrast or that only had so many colors meant that they were naturally high contrast, a lot more so than the kind of realistic games that you see today. So there's actually been a bit of, I'm just gonna pick that up.
No, don't worry.
Right. A little bit more high contrast than we see today in more realistic games, where there's a lot of natural tones, things can be dulled down, it can be more realistic, but it can be harder to pick things up because they're a bit more like higher fidelity. So it's kind of been interesting that at the beginning of games, there were a lot of things that were kind of accessible by design. And then we've kind of had to come in as the tech has evolved and sort of re-established some principles of accessibility and how to make games more accessible again.
And can you give us an overview of Rebellion Games and the type of games you make and some of the things that people might know about your company?
Yes, of course. So Rebellion is, I think, most famous for making the Sniper Elite series and the Zombie Army series. So very shooty-shooty. but they're good fun. Really well known for like sandbox maps as well. So that basically means instead of it being a big sprawling world or like a more linear level, it's something with a bit more exploration in it. So we have a fantastic level design team for Rebellion. So I've been there working as accessibility designer for 2.5 years, coming up to 3 years now. And a lot of that has been trying to establish principles so that we're making our games more accessible. A lot of work in terms of looking at how we can make our UI more high contrast, how we can have text scaling. We've got Atomfall, which is our newest game coming out next year. And the UI team's done a fantastic job on a lot of the things like the text scaling and the contrast and avoiding things like using just color to convey something. So the whole team's done a really, really good job on that game so far, but yeah.
Yeah, and for blind and partially sighted people specifically, are there any features that you've been exploring or things that you're really happy to have started including? I know you mentioned a couple of them already, mm-hmm. but things that you're excited about including in future games?
So one thing that is launching with Atomfall that I'm really excited about is our audio aiming system. So we've kind of built this three-layer system where someone who is completely blind is able to engage with both the melee and the ranged combat in the game. So one layer is kind of like ticking noises that give you an idea of where your crosshair is aiming, both horizontally and vertically. We've also got snapping on, so aim that will snap onto a character and follow them. That's an option that can be turned on and off, and as part of that you can turn on extra audio cues to let you know that you've snapped onto an enemy or that you've snapped off of them. And then the last one is set like passive audio, so it's kind of like if all of our enemies had like a speaker on them that was just blaring some Spotify tunes in like a short range. And this just means that there's spatialized sound and someone without sight is able to locate them and engage with melee combat because we don't have like the ticks or the snapping for melee combat. So yeah, that audio aiming system is really cool. And I've seen a lot of people try it and I'm very excited about how it's been so far. It's been through a lot of testing. Some of our NIB have had a go with it as well. So it's been really cool to see that develop and just get better. So I'm very hopeful and excited for that.
And where is the best place for people to learn about Rebellion, and what consoles and platforms can they play some of your games?
So for Atomfall in particular, we have the website for Atomfall. So that is just atomfall.com. And there's also Rebellion's website. On Rebellion's actual website, we have an accessibility page, which gives you all the accessibility information about some of our more recent games. And Atomfall's site as well has a whole bunch of accessibility information on what we've been working on so far. Obviously, the game isn't out yet, so there's not as much detail as some of the others, but it's still quite a lot of stuff there that you can go and have a look at.
Well, thank you so much, Carrie Waterton from Rebellion, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio, and we'll look forward to hearing your thoughts in the panel.
Thank you so much.
So we are going to talk over the Xbox accessibility features. Can you tell us which model we're looking at?
Yes, so the model we're looking at is the Series S. So that's the slimmer version of the Xbox.
Perfect. And what kind of accessibility features does it have?
You've got built-in magnification, so you can enlarge your screen and make the text bigger or smaller. You've got a built-in screen reader called Narrator, which is available on any Microsoft console or computer, so that'll read everything back to you. Again, you get high contrast on the Xbox as well, and I think that's it for the Xbox as well. So,
is there a particular game that's more accessible than others on the Xbox that would be?
So for the Xbox, the exclusive one that's accessible is Forza Motorsport, so that's a car racing game, so people without sight can play that. There's audio cues, there's cues for when to take corners, when to break, when to the driving line. It'll tell you if you're winning, it'll tell you people have lapped you, it'll give you like an audio cue if you can automatically take you in the pits. So it's one of the most accessible games for the Xbox at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, Graham from Triple Tap Tech, for going over the Xbox S Series accessibility features with us.
Thank you very much to Amelia Hilton for coverage of the Game On exhibition. If it's accessible gaming you're interested in, then do tune in next week when we'll be speaking with Sony Interactive Entertainment about accessibility on PlayStation. Thank you so much for your company this time. As ever, we appreciate you. If you'd like to get in contact with Tech Talk, maybe you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion, great to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Jackie Brown, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavarkovic, until next time, bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Until next time.
Bye.